Gotcha!
Welcome to McGuire on Wrestling.
What do you guys want to talk about?
Let's give the people what they want.
Professional wrestling
with Mike McGuire,
the happiest Canadian camper in the world.
Tell me when I'm telling lies.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hello and welcome to the show. Thanks for being here. Happy St. Patrick's Day if you celebrate here in North America. I hope you're partying and enjoying your green cocktails responsibly. And if you're in Ireland, I hope you had a good time at church. That's what I understand St. Patrick's Day to be. Anyway, it's a big day for that. It's also a big day in pro wrestling. One of the biggest events in pro wrestling history happened today, which we always touch on a little bit in the show. But this one was one I was personally at, so we're going to look back specifically at that. As well, of course, we have the week of wrestling to look back on, but I do want to just welcome you to the fold. If it's your first time here, McGuire on Wrestling, weekly podcast, absolutely free, always about pro wrestling. We're not begging you for a Patreon. If you want to support the show financially, we give you something in return, and that's through the t-shirt store at McGuireShow.com. If you want to get a hold of us, you can find all the ways to do that at McGuireShow.com. The Team MOW McGuire on Wrestling Facebook page is the place to be for all the discussion. And you can also get a hold of me directly on all the socials at McGuireShow or email me, McGuireShow@yahoo.com. We're going to get rolling into the thick of things here right away. But before we do that, I want to give you a couple quick updates. First of all, you may have noticed one of our newer shows, TSC, The Squared Circle, has been off the feed for the last couple weeks. Nothing bad happened there. Just Andy had some things he had to take care of, and he's telling us he's going to be back with a show real soon. So all the best to him, and glad to hear that he's coming back with some new stuff for us. And speaking of new shows on the feed, again, this stuff is always going to be free for you guys. Thank you for hitting subscribe. Thanks for telling your friends about it. Thanks for sharing the show amongst others. But if you would like to get another show for free, make sure you're subscribed up, because my friend Joe Aguinaldo, back from our old Monday Night Raw review days of Tuesday Morning Cooked, he is back for what we're calling a Sometimes Pod. And that show is going to debut this week on the McGuire on Wrestling podcast feed. And it's about a wrestler. It's about a certain wrestler who is building a filmography as we speak. We are taking on every film that John Cena has ever performed in. Period. So as new ones come out, there'll be new podcasts. We're going all the way back to the first ones. Yeah, we're going to watch The Marine and talk about that. But the debut episode of We've Cena Movie is coming up this week, and we're taking on Cena's latest movie, Ricky Stenicki. It's one of the top films on Amazon Prime right now. Of course, everybody's talking about John Cena since his appearance on the Oscars last week. It's the perfect timing to do this. So We've Seen a Movie, going to be part of the McGuire on Wrestling podcast feed starting this week. It'll be in no spoiler zone too, just so you know. So in case you haven't seen the Cena movies yet, then we won't go that deep into it. Although I will tell you this right now. If you don't think John Cena has improved as an actor, you need to go back and watch The Marine, the first one, and then watch some of his latest stuff. Because I'll tell you right now, this is going to be a labor of love. Emphasis on later. Coming up this week, is The Rock taking it too far in a PG era? The WrestleMania card is taking shape with 10 matches already confirmed. More names make their way into the WWE Hall of Fame, and one name is out of AEW for at least 6 to 9 months. Plus, today is the anniversary of one of the greatest wrestling matches of all time, and it happened here in Canada. We got a lot to get to, so without further ado, let's take you through the top stories of the week around here. We call it the Five Counts.
You want to hear the breaking news?
Let's start off this week's Five Count with a certified legitimate hero. He was the first ever UFC heavyweight champion. Beat Dan Severn for that title back in 97. Mark Coleman, UFC Hall of Famer, is still recovering after saving his parents' lives this past week while still inside their burning home. Yeah, Coleman was airlifted to hospital in Toledo, Ohio this past week. He was in very rough condition after suffering severe smoke inhalation. Now, the house itself was obliterated and the fact that everyone survived is nothing short of a miracle. Coleman came to a couple days later, but has since been readmitted with pneumonia, according to a recent report. But in a posting from his daughter on Instagram, Coleman had these very, very emotional words to say as he was coming to and being greeted by his family.
I'm the happiest man in the world. I swear to God, I'm so lucky. I can't believe my parents are alive. They shouldn't be here. I had to make a decision once. Because I got out of my room and went to the door and it was already horrible. I couldn't breathe. I almost had to go outside. And I went back and thank God, I can't believe it.
Again, take the world of combat sports, pro wrestling, entertainment, and throw it to the side. Mark Coleman, a legitimate hero. So glad he's doing okay, and hopefully he kicks out of this pneumonia thing real quick. Well, the WrestleMania XL, or 40 card, now has 10 matches confirmed. Of course, we know all about The Rock and Roman Reigns taking on Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins in night one for that tag team match, which will see a stipulation added to the main event title match for night two, which is Cody Rhodes taking on Roman Reigns for the Undisputed Universal Championship. Seth Rollins will be defending his title against Drew McIntyre for the World Championship. Io Sky faces Bayley for the Women's Championship. And then Rhea Ripley is defending the Women's World Championship against Becky Lynch. Sami Zayn got himself the shot against Gunther for the Intercontinental Championship this past Monday on Raw. However, there is some scuttlebutt going on around that match now, especially after Logan Paul had it confirmed that he'll be facing Randy Orton and Kevin Owens for the U.S. title. Jay and Jimmy Uso are squaring off in a battle of brothers. LA Knight has AJ Styles and a six-pack challenge ladder match for the WWE tag titles has Finn Balor and Damian Priest facing five other teams, which have yet to be determined. Crossing the street over to AEW, they had some box office success in Boston this past Wednesday for Dynamite's Big Business episode, but the TV ratings for the show didn't quite fare as well. Now, the show saw the much-anticipated AEW debut of the CEO, Mercedes Moné. The former Sasha Banks came to the ring and did a monologue touting her excitement for the potential matches that she could be having. Now, despite appearing at the start of the show, followed by the AEW Championship match between Samoa Joe and Wardlow, the show did slip ratings-wise throughout the night. Dave Meltzer has something to say about those numbers coming up in the show. Well, it wasn't a pane of glass, but a slightly less high-risk move that has taken Darby Allin out of action and off his attempt to climb Mount Everest. The AEW star was supposed to be headed to the world's tallest peak this week, but instead he'll be taking some extra time off to heal. The x-ray posted shows that he has broken his foot in three different places. The break happened, according to Darby, after a front flip off the top rope onto the floor onto Jay White.
Coming down hard on Jay White.
He's just fearless. He don't give a rat's ass. He don't care.
He's another level.
He really is.
I've never seen anybody like him.
He's nuts.
Now, Darby could be seen nursing the foot after trying to get up again. It looks like Darby will be out of action for at least 6 to 9 months, depending on how well that foot heals. And wrapping things up this week, more names have been announced for the WWE Hall of Fame, including the greatest, Muhammad Ali and Thunderbolt Patterson. Now, Muhammad Ali served as the referee in the first WrestleMania main event, pitting Roddy Piper and Paul Orndorff against Mr. T and Hulk Hogan. If you remember, Ali did get involved in the match, taking a swing at Piper. Now, Ali passed away back in 2016. Thunderbolt Patterson, though, is a name that many listening are learning about for the first time. Now, Patterson was a successful regional wrestler, especially through different NWA territories, and wrestled against the NWA at one point. He would later be ostracized for speaking out against racism and prejudice facing himself and other black wrestlers in the industry. Now, Patterson was once a tag team partner of Ole Anderson, who recently passed away, as well as he had several high-profile rivalries over the years. Ali and Patterson joined Paul Heyman, the U.S. Express, and Bull Nakano as the announced inductees to date. Thanks again so much for being here, and if you've hit that subscribe button, appreciate it even more. Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer is standing by, but first, it was 22 years ago today. One of the biggest torches was passed in pro wrestling, and it happened in Canada. Also today, just 3 years ago, one match earned a non-contracted star a major deal. Do you know which events I'm talking about? The answers, along with Dave Meltzer, are next.
This is McGuire on Wrestling.
You got to stream the alternate commentary table. Every single Saturday, it's brought to you on the McGuire on Wrestling feed. I'm one half of your host, Demetra Carolis, and I'm here with my partner, Mitch Hondris. Mitch, what is the alternate commentary table?
It's simple. It's the perspective of wrestling from the other side of the railing, the real fans.
That's right. The perspective that you need. You might have a little bit of fun, too. The alternate commentary table. Subscribe free now to the McGuire on Wrestling podcast feed wherever you get your podcast.
Cha-cha!
Welcome back to McGuire on Wrestling.
While it's barely been 2 weeks since we saw the icon Sting call it a career, it was today in 2002 that it was icon versus icon as Hollywood Hulk Hogan would face The Rock at WrestleMania 18, or as it was branded, X8, in Toronto's Sky Dome. The match would actually happen two matches before the main event match of Triple H taking on Chris Jericho for the then undisputed WCW-WWF championships, but many agree that this match should have gone on last given the magnitude of the event. Also today, in 2021, Dr. Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa would have the first women's lights out match in AEW. That match would see Rosa victorious, but that performance would also play a big part in her eventually earning her AEW contract, because at the time she had the match against Britt Baker, she was still contracted to Billy Corgan's NWA. By the way, speaking of Billy Corgan, today his birthday as well. Hey, look at that. Billy Corgan and Stan Wu have something in common. If you don't know Stan, you're missing out.
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider with Dave Meltzer, McGuire on Wrestling.
Well, he's back with us this week, Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer and WrestlingObserver.com. Dave, let's bring up Kurt Angle matches from 20 years ago and talk about them for hours, shall we? I saw your tweets about that, man. The horse is glue when it comes to this conversation. We've talked about the ratings, but, you know, you've said it to me time and time again. People are taking them a little too seriously. This is what you consider a match recommendation score, basically, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's about a time and place. Like, people go, when do you go back? And it's kind of like, if you're not in the time and place and you try to rate matches, you're inherently not getting it. You know, I know people are going to get really mad at this, but I remember, you know, it's like I was taught that by Terry Funk and Bockwinkel as well. That it's like, you know, you wrestle for that day. You're not wrestling for how people look at it 20 years later. So, like, you know, if I go and look at a match 20 years ago, I mean, I might like it a lot, but it doesn't really matter because I'm not 20 years ago. You know what I mean? I mean, I was around, so I can probably framework it to a pretty decent degree. But even so, I mean, I just remember when New Japan World started many years ago and they had all those great old matches, and I started rewatching them and WWE Network as well. When I watched some of the old world class stuff, and it's like there was stuff that I thought that was like awesome in its day, okay, on world class. And when I watched it, because they had to change the crowd noise a little bit and because of the musical issues and things like that, I actually thought that by modern standards, some of the stuff was like really bad. But the fact is that it was fantastic in its day, so it's fantastic. Okay. And with New Japan, I mean, it was funny because a lot of the stuff was actually ahead of its time when it came to usage of jiu-jitsu moves and things like that, that the audience in Japan wasn't even ready for. But because those guys were actual real shooters or shoot trained by Carl Gotch, that some of the stuff actually looked better, although the finishes were always bad. But the match itself actually better than it did at the time. But you know what? That doesn't make it a better match because they were wrestling in front of a 1982 audience, not a 2024 audience that's watched, you know, mixed martial arts for 30 years. It's to me, like rating something today is, you know, from any, you know, even 5 years ago, I think is kind of silly. But 20 years ago or 30 years ago or 40 years ago, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's just like.
I see you get into these discourses online all the time and people come at you. And trust me, like, I mean, you and I have had our disagreements over the years of talking about this too. But the one thing that I sympathize with you on this the most is that, do you feel, and feel free to say whether this is your opinion or not, but I feel it's this generation of fans especially who are being used to getting what they want if they complain about it enough. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're seeing AEW and WWE, for example, both catering finishes these days based on what they think popular recourse will be rather than, you know, whether it's the booking decision of the promoter or not. So do you think that there's maybe a cell of people out there that are thinking that, oh, Dave should go back and re-review all these matches and redo all the star ratings?
I don't have time. I don't even get enough of the matches now done. So going back in time, it's just like that's ridiculous. And even if I did, you know, it's like there would be matches that, okay, I mean, like every now, like when somebody dies, okay, just as an example.
Yeah.
Or occasionally, like when there's a big match, you know, I will go back. I mean, I remember when Tracy Smothers died and I watched the Midnight Express and Southern Boys match from Baltimore, which I was at live, and it was a fantastic match. And I remember, and I watched it, and it's like, oh yeah, this is a fantastic match. But in my mind, from watching the guys today who've just elevated the thing so much, it's like, you know, I thought this match was better then than I do now, but it's still a freaking great match. I mean, it's a great match, but would I have given it 4 3/4 stars today? No, I would. But so what? It's a 4 3/4 star match because they were wrestling for that audience on that day. And for that audience on that day, everybody was talking about it. It finished high in match of the year. So if you transpose it to 2024 and that same match wouldn't finish in the top 50 of match of the year, that doesn't negate that it was actually the number one, if I recall, American match that year. I think there's maybe a couple of Japanese matches ahead. So it's
I just wonder if it's the fans thinking that, you know, oh, we can change, you know, we can get Dave to change his mind, and maybe that's why.
What about that? And besides, it's like, what, changed my mind over a quarter star? That's ludicrous anyway.
Yeah.
It's like, if it was 2 stars, it'd be one thing. But a quarter star, I sit here with, you know, my friends, and even, you know, or when I go to PWG or AEW, and I'm sitting with my friends and we look at, you know, matches, we're always a quarter star off. Sometimes we're identical. If we're more than a star off, then we start talking about it. We're like, why? We're a quarter star off. It's just like, we agree. So, and these people are over a quarter star of a match from 30 years ago, you know, or 20 years ago or whatever. It's actually ridiculous to me.
Let's talk about current day stuff that's going on. Of course, I want to start with this name because when it was announced, I actually had to take a minute and go, holy, I never thought I'd see that name announced so prominently for the WWE Hall of Fame. And then I talked about it a very little bit on our social media page. Blaine Vandergrain used to write for Slam Wrestling. He talked about the history of this guy a bit. But Thunderbolt Patterson being inducted in the WWE Hall of Fame, I think this is probably one of the most interesting from a historical standpoint of a non-mega superstar name. So we touched a little bit about it on social, but can you maybe, for folks that are going, who is Thunderbolt Patterson? Why does this guy matter? Maybe start a bit with and then what happened later.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is that, like, they have a quota system that they still have. And, you know, I mean, it's like, unfortunately for pro wrestling, there were not a lot of black wrestlers pushed historically. And most of the ones who were pushed to any degree are probably in. So it's kind of like, okay, where do we go? You know, and it's kind of like, okay, you know, who haven't we inducted? And it's kind of like, oh, Thunderbolt Patterson. And I think it's no more than that, you know, than anything else. I mean, and especially because, again, I mean, it's funny to me because I was actually alive during the Thunderbolt Patterson career. And I mean, the promoters hated this guy. I mean,
he
was probably among the most hated because he would go, you know, I mean, a lot in Georgia, but he did it here in California as well. You know, I mean, he would go to the press and the commissions and basically complain about, you know, the treatment of black wrestlers. And he wasn't wrong. I mean, because there were absolutely, you know, I wouldn't say it's a weird thing. It was difficult for black wrestlers to get jobs. If the black wrestlers were able to draw, nobody was holding them back. Okay. Mm-hmm. Nobody was holding back. None of these promoters only saw green, but did they, like in territories where their territories were, well, we have a black babyface, so we're not going to bring in another black babyface at the same time. And it's like, not every territory was like that. Were there territories like that? Absolutely. Was it hard for them to, in some places, you know, up until the 70s, get the major singles title in the promotion? Yes, it was difficult. But would they be pushed if they were charismatic and true people? Absolutely. It's a bit, but the history of black wrestlers in the United States, it's not a good one. You know what I mean? It really isn't. If you go back historically, Thunderbolt complained about it, but Thunderbolt also, he exposed the business in the days when, you know, you weren't supposed to do that. He promoted against the NWA, and went with ICW or IWA. He went with the Outlaw Promotions and things like that. So he was not liked. So the idea of him getting in the WWE Hall of Fame is kind of interesting in its way. And he never wrestled in WWE at all during his career. I mean, as far as was he a drawing card? Yes, to a degree. Like one of the top 10 drawing cards in the country. But was he a drawing card? Was he an effective wrestler? Was he a star? Absolutely, he was a star. So it's what it is. I was surprised and not surprised. You know what I mean? It's kind of like there's he's alive and he's in his 80s. So it's kind of like that's good because they would rather, they'd rather induct people who are alive. I mean, that's another one of the things, even though not everyone is, you know, and there's reasons for every induction, you know, but it's not. And he was a star and, you know, he broke the Sheik's unbeaten streak in Toronto, I believe. And he was a star in Georgia and he was a star in Texas. He main evented places, wrestled for the world championship in big matches. So, I mean, he was a star for sure.
I find it interesting from a historical standpoint in that here they have someone who was outspoken about it, and whether he did right or wrong by the promoters, I think is irrelevant in 2024. Going back to the conversation we had about even the matches here, you know, times have changed. The world has changed. I think the way that they're revering him now is almost as someone who did try and speak out, maybe went about it the wrong way back then based on his opposition. But at the same time, I mean, the message isn't lost in what he was trying to say.
I mean, he spearheaded that, you know, he was one of the guys behind that lawsuit against WCW. And mm-hmm. the fact is WCW settled out of court. So there you go. Yeah. It was just interesting to me because again, you know, they favor guys after 84, you know, he was pretty much done in 85. Favorite guys who were in WWE. He never was in WWE. I mean, I think he did have one or two matches in Washington, D.C., you know, on the undercard or whatever, but he was never, you know, never pushed as far as like a big star, never wrestled, right, you know, or anything like that. But with women and as well, it's like you, not the easiest to find a lot of people. With women now, it's easier because so many have been pushed in WWE. WWE Hall of Fame is what it is. You know, it's like,
right,
you have certain things that you do and, you know, again, like Leah Maivia, you know what I mean? It's like she's going to be there because she's Dwayne's grandmother. And it gets, you know, Dwayne out there to do a speech. Cool. Is she the best promoter who is not in the Hall of Fame? Would you rate her above Sam Mushnick or Jack Curley or Crockett Jr. or Sr.? Of course not. But they don't have Dwayne out there doing the speech. So she's the one who gets picked.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens as the official announcements are still pending, but yeah, Liam Ivey is rumored to be one of those people for sure. Okay, let's get into what's happened here in the last week of television now, and we start off in AEW. The reveal that was a surprise to absolutely no one, but Mercedes Moné now in AEW. Her debut, was this a win or a flop overall, do you think?
Neither, and it's too soon to say. I mean, it's like, got to see her in programs, got to see how she wrestles. Got to see if she gets over with the crowd. I mean, I don't even want to judge it. It was, the people liked her, you know, it was in Boston. They gave her a song. People are going to chant CEO and that's all well and good. We'll see if it works out. She's certainly now the biggest star in their women's division. And that elevates that division. If she is the wrestler that she was before, because again, we haven't seen her in a match since she got a very bad injury.
Mm-hmm.
So now she was moving around good. So that was a good sign. So, you know, when we see her in some matches and how she gets over, and also it's a different style than the one she's worked with, which is actually perhaps to her benefit because, you know, there's no holding her back. You know, you have a lot more leeway in AEW with what to do to get over. So if she is the wrestler that she was, not necessarily has the same quality of opposition that she may have had, but she's still got some very good potential opponents. And if she's the wrestler that she was before the injury, she should have great matches with the AEW and Stardom, obviously starting to do business and everything like that. That will also bring her, well, not very well known, that will bring her some awesome, awesome wrestlers and the chance for some great, great matches, you know, and even with Stephanie Vaquer, you know, who they can use because Stephanie is a CMLL talent. And Stephanie and Mercedes, before she got hurt, they had a great match. So I would say that it's a positive, but, you know, the jury's out. And I mean, to judge her, it's going to take a couple months.
Well, the only reason I bring it up is because I did see your tweet about the numbers for the show overall. And I mean, a lot of fans, a lot of people that watch the show, myself included, I mean, I looked at that show. It was very, very top heavy. And by the end of it, it just seemed like everything had kind of dwindled off and died off. And yeah, she came out at the end, but it just seemed like we went from Mercedes to world title match. And then everything just kind of ticked down as we went further on in the show.
Well, that's true. I didn't think that when they were doing the show and they announced the main event was Riho and Willow Nightingale, you know, my reaction was like, that's not a main event. It's a good match. And they actually had a damn good match, but it's not a main event.
Well, not when your world championship is on the show, you know, especially when you have that match.
No matter what, it doesn't matter who's on the show. I think that one thing you have to understand is that some people are main eventers and some people aren't. And, you know, Willow and Riho are not main eventers, even though they're very good wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And they had a good main event match, but the audience showed, you know, it's like, they didn't stick around for it in high enough numbers compared to a lot of main events. Although the ratings pattern for WWE Raw and for Dynamite and sometimes other shows, but those two in particular, the main event always does a low number because people, you know, for different reasons. With Raw, you know, they usually will watch, and you know, people will watch less, but they will tune in later because a lot of people tune in at 9 on Raw. With AEW, everyone tunes at 8 because you know that they front load. And by 9:30, a lot of people have seen their hour of wrestling and they're ready to move on. SmackDown's the same way. I mean, when SmackDown had Dwayne on first or The Rock on first a couple of weeks ago, that thing just freaking cratered after he was gone.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when you put something really, really big on first and you don't have a strong main event, you're always risking that. Yeah. And more often than not, that's what's going to happen.
I think just optically, though, when you have a match for your world championship and you're not calling that the main event on the same show, that to me was just a big miss because, I mean, that's the argument, right? You have a big spectacle match or your world title match. That's always been the big thing. And so if you're going to have the world title match second, you better have a damn good spectacle at the end of the show. And like you said, yeah, Riho and Willow, no disrespect to them as performers, but yeah, definitely not.
They're not main eventers, and a lot of people are not main eventers that they sometimes put in main events, and it usually ends up the same way. But I think that Tony's mentality is that the biggest audience is going to be early, so the angles that I want people to see, you know, I want them early, you know. And I mean, again, this show is one of the keys of this show is to build the pay per view. Samoa Joe and Strickland is going to be, you know, one of the main events. The two main events are that one and Will Ospreay and Danielson. So it's like, I want people to see this angle when the most number of people are watching, which is early, not late. So I understand that. But still, you can do that. And you could have put, you know, I mean, the audience would have fallen off if they had put the six man with the Young Bucks and Okada on last two, because that's what it does every week, except for unusual circumstances. But that's probably still a better way of doing it than they did, because more people would have stuck around for that than would have stuck around for Burrito and Willow. But, you know, whatever. I mean, the rating was what the rating was. I was disappointed, you know, first time for Mercedes. I was hoping that she'd move it. But again, how many people knew? And if they did, you know, is she going to be, you know, like, look, Adam Copeland didn't like set ratings on fire, and he was a big, big star. And I think that, to me, Adam Copeland and Christian Cage are doing great, great work in AEW. But, you know, it's like, are they changing the ratings? And it's no, you know, and at the, you know, I actually think now that the rating is what the rating is. The rating is what the with this many hours of wrestling every week, and what this is the number two promotion, and the number one promotion has 5 hours. If it's not a pay per view week, and even more if it is, and even the 2 hours of NXT, and it's like, and people have so much time in their lives, and so this 0.27 may just be this is what the rating is, and it's a good number, but. You know, people like I was thinking that maybe you boost it, but you know, the number really like, you know, Punk and a few others, Sting did, I think at first, Moxley did, I think, you know, I mean, there's some people who have, but it's not that many. And again, you got to remember when they were doing it, WWE wasn't nearly as strong as it is now. And WWE is The Rock. So if someone's going to be boosting numbers, it's The Rock this week. It's not going to be Mercedes. I think that's one of the things, that's one of the lessons of the week.
We'll talk about The Rock in just a few minutes here. Dave Meltzer from The Wrestling Observer and WrestlingObserver.com joining us. Sticking with AEW, Darby Allin was set to take off to Mount Everest and turns out a front flip onto the floor, and he's now got a broken foot. We've talked about this numerous times. You've said it before. I had Savio Vega on the show last week, and he brought up, you know, whether this is numerically accurate or not, but he says more wrestlers are getting hurt now than in the entire 50 years that he's been around the business. And I was like, you know, that could
be true. I mean, I probably tally it again this week, but it's usually 8 to 9% of the AEW roster and about 11 to 12% of the WWE roster are hurt at any one time. I'd say like maybe 9 to 12% of WWE, because one time it was, you know, 9%, but that's usually the thing. So, and then those are close numbers, but it's like, what is an acceptable number? I don't know. You know, I mean, football players get hurt, you know, hockey players get hurt and all that, but yes. Are there too many risks? I think so. And Darby more than anyone in the universe. I mean, he's insane, but that's also what he kind of lives for, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, and I mean, it's funny because he got hurt and he's done things far crazier than we got hurt on. But, you know, I mean, that's usually what happens. You know, it's like Rey Mysterio used to do all these crazy things and not get hurt. And then he would do something simple and his knee would go out, you know, and it's the wear and tear and what the day your number is called. And I think that was the day Darby's number was called, is that, you know, the wear and tear happened. And, you know, again, with him, I mean, I think he's going to get hurt more, or he's going to have to tone his style down. I mean, that's just how it goes.
Well, sticking with the injuries in AEW here, Sammy Guevara reportedly got suspended. Do we have any update on that suspension since and when he might be back?
No, I mean, the only thing is that, you know, the story, you know, from those defending him is that it was a complete miscommunication, that, you know, he didn't hear what they were saying. But, you know, they suspended him and they have a committee that does it, and they thought that was the right thing to do. And also, I mean, one thing about it is it again brought that whole, what do you do if there's a fear of a concussion? And, you know, the rule should be, you know, and it should not be up to Sammy Guevara. It should be the referee and the doctor, and they should go in there and stop the match. I mean, like they said, go to the finish. He went to the finish. I mean, Hardy did say he wanted to take the finish, and Hardy's the veteran. That said, a knee to the head after with a fear of a concussion, the guy who is hurt probably shouldn't be the one making that decision. But guess what? His opponent shouldn't be the one either.
So for those that missed this thing entirely, what happened was Jeff Hardy got a broken nose, and so they weren't sure if he'd been concussed or not. You can't tell that on the spot. I mean, literally in the middle of a match, there's no way. So, I mean, logically in my head, yeah, there could be a fear of concussion here based on the damage. So the finish was basically a knee to the face and just didn't end well for anybody, I guess, overall here. But is this a proactive move, you think, by AEW? And is this something they should consider more for protecting their wrestlers? Or is the suspension of one guy versus another the right move?
I don't know about suspensions. I think that the move shouldn't be the wrestler. The move should be the doctor, and just go to Doc Samson. Look, he's a real, you know, I mean, Doc Samson and the referee. And go, if you think someone has a concussion, you do the X sign and it's over. And the fans will understand, you know, the talent will probably be mad because everyone wants to do their match and wants to do their finish. But the caution is something. And it goes for WWE too. I mean, we saw not that long ago, you know, Ricochet go 10 minutes after a concussion, and that shouldn't have happened. And thank God he didn't get another one, because that could have been then it could have been an Adam Cole situation, and that's not a situation you want anyone to have. The so I mean, I think with every company, not just WWE Japan, everywhere, it's like the doctor should be vigilant about looking for something, and if they think it may have happened, you stop the match. You know, I mean, that's just that. You stop the match. You err on the side of caution. If it's not the finish that you want and the guy is okay, bring it back in 3 weeks and do the finish that you want, and everyone will remember the finish you want. And yeah, will the fans boo? At first, for a few seconds, they will, but the fans will understand. This fan base is not stupid. They're, you know, when WWE stopped the match, not that, you know, after the Ricochet thing, they did a situation where they did stop the match. The fans were upset for like 20 seconds and then figured out, hey, guess what? And then they were actually clapped. So yeah. It's like the fans will understand. And even if they don't, you just have to do it. You have to err on, you don't want what happened to Bret Hart. You don't want what happened to Adam Cole. You know, you don't want multiple concussions in a short period of time, because then you're threatening somebody's career.
All right, let's jump over to WWE now, Dave. One of the big stories coming out of this week, especially even after this past Friday, is The Rock. And there's some rumblings now that his R-rated promos on social media and his edgy promos on TV, it seems like he's getting carte blanche to do whatever he wants. And is it other wrestlers? Is it officials? Is this something we think is just being made up? But people are reportedly being a little not happy about Rock having so much creative freedom, we'll say, when it comes to his promos.
I don't know. You know, it's like, you know, the rules you play on a network TV, and you got to live within those rules or they'll bleep you. And as far as social media goes, it's social media. I don't have any problem with anything that he says in social media, as long as it's like, I've watched his promos. I think they're great. If he says something tasteless or racist or something, you know, that would be terrible. If he says a swear word on social media, big freaking deal. You know what I mean? I don't even see a controversy in it at all. That's just, you know, that's why he's doing it on social media, because he can go a little further than he can go on, you know, on television. And he's utilizing everything. I mean, he's a freaking master at this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's jump over completely now to WrestleMania week here. Not so much about the matches yet, but one match that's happening outside of WrestleMania. Shayna Baszler, current WWE star, has been signed to work with Josh Barnett and GCW for Bloodsport, which is one of the events during Mania week. This is definitely unheard of for WWE during a WrestleMania week, no less, but to have someone from their roster appear on an indie show like this. Again, is this just a sign of the times now with the new ownership and the new management, or is this just a special favor? Like, Shayna obviously is very popular among the wrestlers. I mean, you know, people love working her, it seems, and it seems to be a great fit. But overall, having Shayna Baszler on a GCW show, basically, with no WWE affiliation otherwise, I mean, this is kind of surprising, isn't it?
Yeah, it surprised me. I mean, I understood why she would ask for it. I mean, Josh Barnett's her trainer. You know, so, you know, they're close, and I'm sure she asked, and I guess I was surprised they approved it. And then I asked, I go, like, you know, what happened? And it's just like, Paul Levesque is in Vince McMahon. So does that mean we're going to see more of it? I mean, my impression was yes, but, you know, we'll see. I heard, you know, they're going to allow more of this, you know, we'll see, because now I know all kinds of promoters. Hey, is there any way we can get, you know what I mean? Get someone, you know, like whether it's Japan or you know, Mexico or anything like that. It's like, hey, is there any way we can get guys from WWE? Because they would love to do it. So they're going to have to pick and choose, because they're not going to be able to satisfy every promoter that wants it, or every talent that wants to do something for fun, you know, because a lot of these guys obviously came up through different systems. You know, I mean, I'm sure that there would be, I mean, if PWG was still around, and it's not right now, but let's say, you know, it restarts. There's a lot of guys on that WWE roster just for nostalgia would love to go back there for one night. But do you let that? I don't know. You know, it's I think that one of the things I think is because AEW does let people do stuff like that, is maybe like, hey, you know what? If they're going to let him do it, We don't want to be the mean guys, you know, in this, you know what I mean? Like Vince didn't care about being the mean guy because Vince,
right.
was Vince and everything. It's like, hey, you know, we know there's another company here. And if they're nice to indie promoters, we're going to have everyone ganging up on us. And not that we can't handle it because we can, but let's be nice too. So that's, I think that that's some of it too. It's just like, let's not run around and be isolationist and have everyone in wrestling think that they're our enemy. Let's make friends. So I think that that's, you know, part of the mentality.
All right, let's look a little bit at this WrestleMania card coming up now. We have 10 matches that we know are happening. One of them that is very interesting is this six-pack challenge for the tag titles. There's also rumored to be, we have one three-way match for the U.S. title already lined up. There's talks that maybe it could be a three-way for the Intercontinental, getting Chad Gable into that match with Gunther and Sami Zayn as well. Is this the right move, like all these multi-person matches because it's WrestleMania, or is this maybe them diluting the card a bit?
I don't like multi-person matches as a general rule. You know, like Logan Paul, Kevin Owens, and Randy Orton. I mean, it should be a really good match. And does Kevin Owens help that match? I think so. So it's fine.
Right.
The multi-team ladder match, it's a ladder match. You know, you want all kinds of crazy chaos action. So that's not a bad match by any means. And they're getting the different personalities in. If Gable is added or not added, I think if Gable's added, it strengthens the match. So I wouldn't be against that one either. But yeah, as a general rule, you know, I mean, I would rather have straight singles. I'm not a fan of just throwing a whole bunch of people on cards just to get everyone a spot. But I mean, the good thing is it's two nights also. So they're going to be able to take care of all their biggest stars in two nights, you know, and without doing, you know, those old 15 match cards where then you do the card and then a whole bunch of matches, you know, you get a bunch of 3-minute matches and the guys
right.
are kind of screwed too. So, I mean, the idea of a 7-match, 4-hour card where everyone gets time, well, I mean, I think that's what WrestleMania is going to start being with the two nights.
Okay, John Cena has said in interviews that he's open that day. Is it too late to fit him in somewhere on this thing?
No, of course not. He's John Cena. You know, I mean, he's been taught. Look, they've been talking to John Cena about this for months. And it's, you know, I don't know where it stands today. I know where it stood, whatever it was the last time I reported on. I'm going to say 2-3 weeks ago when I asked. And it was just like, you know, he wants to do something. But it's he does have stuff he's filming. And he doesn't want to do some. I don't think he wants to do a match where there's a risk of injury. So can he do a short match? Yeah. Can he do a talking segment where there's maybe a bump or two? Yeah. Does he want to go out there and do a main event match? Probably not. That was the impression I got. But I mean, as far as being on the card, I mean, I think everyone assumed he'd be on the card.
Fair enough. And last thing, Dave, it was 22 years ago today that The Rock was in a main event match, even though it wasn't the last match. Of course, it was a passing of a torch in many ways. Hogan versus Rock, WrestleMania 18. That was my first live WrestleMania, so I got my thoughts on it. But just looking back on that match today, do you have any memories or thoughts from that time?
Well, I mean, the funny thing is that I was in a studio doing a radio show when that match was going on. And so I didn't see the match. I saw the match when I got home.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was funny because Brian Alvarez was on the phone with me. And he's kind of going through it. And then at the end, like the last 2 minutes, he goes like, they're going to the finish. And I called the entire finish, move for move, the whole finish. You know, it's like,
wow,
he's going to do this, he's going to do this. So it was kind of like, well, you know, I mean, it's like Hogan's pretty predictable. And, you know, The Rock always wins with a rock bottom. And so missed leg drop, rock bottom, you know, it's kind of like, that's the finish. That's kind of how Rock would structure his matches back then. And, no, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, I just thought it was kind of funny that, you know, I mean, it was very predictable, but predictable isn't bad. I mean, some people think predictable is bad. I don't think it's bad. When you're doing good booking, it should be predictable because the logical booking is predictable.
Well, fans were literally jumping out of their seats during this whole match the whole time. Like, literally, if you go back and watch the crowd. Oh, so, awesome. I mean, from a moment, I think it definitely still stands the test of time as one of those great moments. But
I
just wonder if you got any memories from it.
It was a great, great crowd. But just like Hogan Warrior, you know, which is also in Toronto. You know, great, great crowd. Hogan was so big in Toronto always. So that helped a lot. I mean, it was funny because, you know, again, Rock was supposed to be the babyface in that match, but then they they did kind of know it was going to go that way. You know, that's when they sent him home to get his red and yellow gear to change gear, because they could tell going in that, hey, you know, look, you're going to be the baby face. So, you know, I think he worked a little bit as the heel, but in the end he did all his regular baby face spots, and that's what the people wanted. And, you know, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a famous match.
All right, Dave Meltzer from Wrestling Observer, WrestlingObserver.com. Latest issue came out. What are some things you highlighted in this one, Dave?
Yeah, so, you know, the Vince stuff, obviously, you know, with the new names involved and what they knew, didn't know, allegedly knew, and a lot more stuff, you know, having talked to some people there and, you know, their comments and everything on it. And then Mark Coleman, you know, story, big story on Mark, who he's back in the hospital, unfortunately, but...
yeah, we talked about it earlier, back in with the pneumonia, but still, I mean, the fact he's even alive is amazing, so...
He's a big hero, and then coverage of the UFC. We did analysis of WWE pay-per-views, Hall of Fame stuff, big story on the whole WWE Hall of Fame, whether it's Lea Maivia or Thunderbolt or Wyndham and Rotunda or everyone, Muhammad Ali, the whole story on... everything Muhammad Ali did in pro wrestling. There's a lot more that people don't know. I mean, they may know Ali and Oki and they may know WrestleMania, but there's a lot more there. You know, I mean, dating back to 1970, whatever it was, early 70s in Miami Beach, and the stories behind that, and Mid-South wrestling with the Snowman and things like that. So the whole Muhammad Ali pro wrestling, Freddie Blassie and Gorgeous George, 1962 or 63, when he... learned the promo style and everything. So actually a pretty big Ali story when it comes to pro wrestling. And then, you know, just all the rest of the news as well.
There you have it. Dave Meltzer. You can check him out every week here and at Wrestling Observer Live, WrestlingObserver.com. Always a pleasure, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay. Have a great week.
Coming up on the show, some of your feedback from the last week on the Team MOW McGuire on Wrestling Facebook page. And we've talked about it a bit, but I was there. WrestleMania X8. This day back in 2002, a few memories from that show on the way as well.
This is McGuire on Wrestling.
Hello from jolly old England. This is Andy Evans from the Squared Circle podcast, which you can listen to each and every week on McGuire on Wrestling podcast feed. If you would like to know the latest from professional wrestling with coverage of TNA, WWE, All Elite, New Japan, and more, plus in-depth look back at what happens on the days gone by, then check us out each and every week as part of your midweek fix. This is TSC, the Squared Circle.
Welcome back to McGuire on Wrestling.
Final segment of the show here. I want to go out and enjoy some of my St. Patrick's Day, which will involve going to bed early because I do a morning show. But nevertheless, always great to look back on the week on the Team MOW McGuire on Wrestling Facebook page. I was surprised to see this, but my pal Joe Aguinaldo got himself a ticket to go to Dynamite this week. So, Joe, guess what? You're coming on the show to talk about it next week and maybe see how this experience rates against your other Pro Wrestling Live experiences. Lots of talk, of course, about The Rock being on SmackDown this past Friday. I know that Mitch and Dimitri had a lot to say about it on the alternate commentary table yesterday, which if you haven't checked that show out yet, it's, again, the less serious look at pro wrestling. It's a ton of fun, that show, but they do really care about pro wrestling. Mitch doesn't care enough to get names right half the time, but other than that, he's a really big fan. But in all seriousness, check out that show and give it a listen. Andy will be back, and then of course, like we mentioned earlier in the show, We've Seen a Movie makes its debut this week, so can't wait to share that with you as well. Also, lots of talk about Mark Coleman and that great story of what he was able to do in saving his parents' lives, and now, again, we're pulling for that guy, who we talked about in the show, suffering with some pneumonia. But this is bound to happen with how much smoke inhalation he had. Lung damage is nothing to mess with, and so it's no surprise there. But still, hoping for the best for him that he pulls through here. A really interesting topic that came up was something we talked about last week, and that is the Prime logo sponsorship on the ring canvas. And with Logan Paul getting that deal done, I mean, money is money and it makes that sort of thing. But there's a lot of great discussion about this after the show last week. It seems to be that most of you are actually in favor of having the canvas be blank, or at least not having the logo be as big as what it is on the ring mat there. And then also, I want to thank Jake for just posting a general feedback comment here. There were some questions about ratings. I think we addressed those in the show today with Dave. But overall, I think one thing that I can't reiterate enough is the whole star ratings thing. Like, we don't get hung up about it here because I like to think we find more interesting things to talk to Dave about. And whether you like, love, or hate the guy, he's, again, a wealth of wrestling knowledge. And that's what we try and do on this show. What he does on Wrestling Observer Live, what he does in his columns, or especially on his Twitter, that's his business. I don't care. As long as he's not doing anything to hurt or, you know, really attack people, then, you know, he's always going to have a place here. But, again, the mentality that some wrestling fans have of, you know, everything has to be criticized, everything's terrible, everybody stinks, you know, everything sucks. It's just, it's not worth it, guys. It's just not worth having that energy. So, on that note, I wanted to leave you with a happy memory of pro wrestling here, and that was this day in 2002. It was actually a gift to me from my birth mom, Mary, who you've met if you listen to me on other podcasts and back in the Tuesday Morning Cook days and maybe once in a while showing up on live feeds and stuff. But actually, I got sent to WrestleMania while I was in college getting upgrading for radio school. Like, it was this weird time in my life in 2001, 2002. I was actually a high school dropout, and it wasn't for anything other than just complete outside life going on. Like, I've always had pretty decent grades. I know how to figure things out, stuff like that. But for me, it was life outside that saw that happen. So going back and getting the skills I needed to get into college and move on and everything else, it was a lot of work. And if you guys know me, you know that I'm not afraid to hustle. You know, it seems to be kind of my mantra, is that if I can find a way to make things more difficult, I will. But, oh boy, that's another ball of wax for another day. But what I'm saying is, I'm not afraid to grind. And so, as a surprise gift for an early birthday or whatever you want to call it, I got sent to WrestleMania 18. Got to pick my seats. At the time, I thought getting floor seats was the most important thing. Little did I realize those seats would be about 50 rows back on the floor. Like, there's the ringside section, then there's another section, and then there's the section I was like basically in far right field. Like, where, not even where the right fielder would be, like where the catcher is. You know what I mean? Actually, it's a right field, left field. Anyway, whatever it is. First baseline, left field, whatever. Bottom line is, I was far away from the ring. Didn't matter. Was still there. Got to feel the energy. Got to do some cool things. Went to fan access. I met Kane. I got to do something I talked about in the past, doing commentary with Kevin Kelly, who back in the day was one of WWE's lead announcers. So that was really cool. All these great experiences, and then to be in that building. And there's nothing like walking into your first WrestleMania if you're a wrestling fan. I don't even care if you're a casual WWE fan at best. But when you walk in, and the first thing you see in this massive building of the Sky Dome is the WrestleMania X8 logo. And I always have this weird paranoia in my brain that my ticket's not going to work. You know what I mean? Like, I always think that, oh, this is too good to be true. It's not happening. But my ticket worked, and I got in, and there's the banner, and there's the lighting rig they had was this big spiral that went down from the ceiling of the Sky Dome right down over the ring. So I got to see all that. And then the show actually starts, and Saliva and Drowning Pool were playing. It wasn't Disturbed, trust me. Drowning Pool, all right. Saliva were great. And they did the songs, and all of a sudden we kicked off, and boom, here we are. It's WrestleMania. So we start off hot. You've got the match between William Regal and Rob Van Dam for the Intercontinental Championship. RVD goes over, and we're off to the races, right? Some of the matches, better than others as far as build and everything else. This was the WrestleMania that had Edge taking on Booker T as they were arguing over who got a Japanese shampoo endorsement. But there were also other great matches. You had this incredible women's three-way match, which was really, really underrated. I thought Jazz was in this thing with Lita and Trish Stratus, but Jazz retained the title. Right? People forget that fact. It's like, yeah, Trish showed up in her Maple Leaf and everything, but Jazz actually won that match. You had Chuck and Billy win the tag team championship match in a four-way against the Hardys, the APA, and the Dudleys. Stone Cold over Kevin Nash, or Scott Hall, I should say, with Kevin Nash on the outside. And, of course, The Undertaker's streak continued against Ric Flair. Flair has spoke multiple times about how that match was a turning point for him in his confidence and everything, and maybe helped the Nature Boy keep going. What else was on that? I'm just looking at the card here. Oh, yeah, Kurt Angle over Kane, and the Hardcore Championship was running all around Sky Dome. Spike Dudley, Hurricane, Mighty Molly, Maven, Christian all came in and left as the Hardcore Champion. That was a weird thing. The more I look back at that, I'm like, yeah, I don't miss it that much. I mean, it had its moments, right? Oh, and DDP versus, remember when Christian Cage would flop around in the ring because he had temper tantrums? Yeah, that was good stuff. And of course, last on that show, Triple H taking down Chris Jericho with Stephanie McMahon for the Undisputed Championship. But it was a one-match show. It really was, with no disrespect to all those. And that was Hogan versus Rock. And I just remember, like, I live for these days when I go to a wrestling show of any magnitude, just to have that feeling of not sitting there and nitpicking and not sitting there and trying to analyze everything I'm seeing and just getting caught up in the moment. And whether you think The Rock versus Hogan was a great match or if you think it was a terrible match, I don't think it was a terrible match. I've never said it was a terrible match. Was it the most complex match? No. Didn't need to be. If you were there, if you were in that building, you got caught up in that emotion, I don't care how old you are, you felt it. And I just remember feeling that and carrying that feeling for weeks when I got home. I felt incredible, and it made me love wrestling even more. I was sad that I didn't stick around and go to Montreal the next night for Raw, because we all know what happened there. And if you don't know, look it up. But basically, we got the face turn that we wanted from Hogan. The whole time, by the way, that Hogan was doing the pose down at the end of the match against The Rock, everybody was screaming, "Play Real American, play Real American." It didn't happen, obviously. They played The Rock's theme like three or four times, but it was still a great time and a great memory, and it was also the last WrestleMania of the WWF. Yeah. So that's another neat little thing about it. Anyway, that's that. I was going to go into a whole thing about John Cena and getting his massive amount of coverage, ironically, for being uncovered. But we'll talk about that, I think, down the road here. Maybe we'll talk about it more in the first episode of We've Seen a Movie. That'll be up on the feed this week for you. And we'll all be back with you again next week. As always, thank you so much for listening and letting me do what I do. Until then, play safe, drive safe. Dimitri, this is for you. Happy seeing you.